investigate which you might just do another very well known body would just give us a statement of that very important constitutional role.
Yes, Chair, we do believe that we are that body. We do believe that we have contributed and added a lot of value to the intergovernmental relations in South Africa. And we do believe that, you know, where we have been consulted and we have engaged, because we are not detached. When we get requests from people, from Treasury, from Department, we don't sit behind closed doors and start giving an answer. We actually go out and interact with those people and other related stakeholders to make sure that we give a balanced answer. And therefore, really, we believe we are very, very critical in that sense.
Can I have a
nuts and bolts
follow-up,
Chair?
Now, as a consultative body, you should, given the circumstances we've just sketched, the severe vertical fiscal imbalance, as a consultative body, I would imagine that you would be of inestimable value to the provinces. Your law provides that you must give our finance minister advice 10 days before he tables the division of revenue, and he must answer you well within the bounds of our culture of justification and the constitution. But the provinces, which are at the receiving end, surely you must be of enormous value to them. And I would like to hear that they queue at your door, that they beat down your door, but how active are you in fact with the provinces, or how active are the provinces? Do they consult you?
Thank you.
So,
we have a forum that is called the Budget Council, basically at the Treasury level. And we attend that forum, and at that forum, even though we go in as observers, we pick up all the issues that come from the provinces and go and articulate them. And where it is necessary, we do go back to that province that we have led a certain issue and clarify the issue more with them. In addition to that, the provinces themselves consult us on very, very critical issues, for example, the fuel levy that the Western Cape has debated and so forth. We were very much at the center of that analysis, and we gave our view, and it went well with government. The issues of cross-border people using our services, you know, We are right at the center of that and giving opinions. For example, KwaZulu-Natal, you know, for most of last year, were in interactions with them where they were requesting clarifications on those issues. And with our recommendations that we submit annually, we visit all the provinces to inform them. We visit their elected entities here to inform them about what our recommendations have been, and they ask questions and so forth. And also some of our work actually comes from the questions that they raise, because we then come back and do that analysis.
Okay, on appendix
section
1, you respond by saying the recommendation, the results of the recommendation. My copy is cut in half. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. So we really don't know, because this is a central issue. What happens not here? I've been trying to be a magician, because it's cut in half. And therefore, I can't make out. 1996-1997 recommended that it is impossible that we might get a more complete version, so that we can look at it in a more realistic way. So can we move on then? The reduction of commissioners on pages 9, and the reduction of the collection of the provinces from 9 to 3 is regarded as an attempt, some provinces, to clip your wing. You know that originally there were 22 commissioners. This long rigmarole of down from each province, nine from the center, two or three of government. Now, what was the reason for reducing the commission from 22 to 9? And what is the role of the Minister of Finance in the selection of commissioners and chairperson?
The numbers were reduced before I came, but the information that I was given was that the commission was just too big and very cumbersome to get into meetings, and and people sort of did not attend in an even manner, and for that reason it was then thought that it must be reduced. And that's what happened.
The reason I'm asking is because the first question is independence. The independence in the legislation. There is enormous variation who appoints the commissioners. In this particular case, the president appoints the commissioners. Now, clearly, I'm not asking you for a response, but I mean, this is one of the things we're taking into account, because you're accountable to Parliament. So, from the committee's point of view, we're to consider whether the role of the minister and the president does not interfere with your independence. Secondly, the question we ask about independence is the funding arrangements. Could you tell us about the funding arrangements? Because this is part of the independence. Again, there's enormous variation. Could you tell us about the funding arrangements, please?
Yeah, in our case, we submit our budgets to the Treasury and discuss it bilaterally with the Treasury, and then we get what we are asking for, basically, without condition. And I must say, because we are experiencing really, we do feel that independence, so we don't feel obliged to beholden to the Treasury in that sense. We just feel that, the process, I found the process there, I have not necessarily found it cumbersome, even though we have some recommendations for the document.
You also indicate, more than once, about confusion in the roles of chairperson and deputy chairperson, basics, for example. Is there anything in the constitution legislation prevents the commission from clarifying this matter as to the respective roles?
No, I think that one becomes an internal issue, we believe, that we'll set it out.
But you do recommend, as a commission, and I've seen it, the abolition of the post of vice chairman, deputy chairman.
Right, sir.
That
one is different. I did it initially in our management process, that's where I accepted it. But we flexed it to the commission, and that's actually one reason why the commission feels that we need to discuss the issue further. And that is also one mandate that I have from the commission, to request the committee to have us withdraw that recommendation so that we can go and discuss it further.
14.21, page 11. Yes, we are requesting questions. Chair, since you choose to deal with the appointment mechanism now under the rubric of independence, then I would like to put some questions that do arise from your question 14. Is that the order? May I draw your own attention first, and that of Professor de Toit, Chairman, to what seems to me an unusual fact. If you look at the amended constitution, section 2G1, the constitution still says we have the nine persons from the provinces and the ones from Telga and nine other persons. It still has, the constitution still has the full complement of 22. And then so there's simply a little note to say that this is now substituted by section 2 of Act 2. Now, but surely, the Constitution should be amended. How can you go around substituting a mechanism?
The Constitution has been amended.
It has.
Yeah, it's not the very principle.
But was the second two rounds and then the side question? Was the second two rounds from?
Yes, but we have to look at the basic constitutional amendment.
Yeah.
I don't think the divine providence intervenes here.
Well, you mean to say that it was amended by act? Chair, no, just on the matter of the appointment making attempt. Our court, including the highest constitutional court, has on a number of occasions had occasion to remark on how important an appointment mechanism is to the independence of any given body, whether it is a court or a commission. And it is said that each should be dealt with according to its own nature. But that mechanism is very important, and I think it is right that it should be discussed, and it's interesting that you have made a proposal. And it seems to me that what your paper asks for, whoever it emanates from, is for a system that comes closer to the appointment mechanism for the Chapter 9. That seems to be the inspiration for the proposal given. Because it asks that the speaker should handle them, the National Assembly should make the recommendation or choose the commissioners, and that the president appoints thereafter. Now, that is in fact what is constitutionally required for the Chapter 9. And that seems to you seem to me to be asking for that, which seems to me to be sound. You therefore do not want the president on his own and on the advice presumably of certain ministers to appoint the chair and the deputy chair. Do you still propose that the provinces should still between the nine of them pick three people? You don't change the position on that score, do you? Do you still propose that SELGA should still send a representative? And do you mean that the two other persons, surely you mean that they too must come through the assembly process? Because your proposal in 14 asks simply that the persons referred to in subsection A, which is the chair and the deputy chair, it asks something that those two persons should be chosen by the assembly and then formally appointed by the president. But you make no reference in the submission to the subsection, whatever it is, probably be about the other person, the two other persons.
Thank you.
Yeah, Chair, I think that is actually one area. Because we are dealing with compliance here as management. But it's obvious that we have certain oversight. And I think that is the area where I would like to be allowed that I go back to the commission and we settle that at that level. In fact, we're having a meeting this weekend on Saturday.
Yeah. Well, it's a bit unusual. So we have new submissions from commissions. It would be preferable if we've got a consolidated single as we have. Yes, this one.
To follow up on the other matter that you have raised now under this rubric of the independence, nothing is more important to the independence of an institution than its funding and its line of funding, and on that matter too the Constitutional Court has uttered. And I found it very interesting. The Court has said that in fact Parliament must devise the budget and defend it, and that is exactly what your proposal, whether from management or wherever else, that's exactly what your proposal in fact suggests. It wants us to create chaff, what you call an oversight mechanism, presumably some super committee. It wants your budget to be worked out between yourselves and that committee, and that committee then to go and defend it. And that too, you will no doubt come back to us on that proposal. The thinking is certainly sound. And I think what deserves to be remarked upon is that it so happens that your line minister is also the Minister of Finance. And that surely can't be the optimum situation from the point of view of institutional governance and independence. We have a difficulty. We have in this country a very fine finance minister, but we can't legislate and create systems on the basis that we will always have such a person. So you will come back and confirm to us that you want another reporting mechanism or budget spending mechanism.
You will do that, right? Can you just tell us about your relationship with the present and the previous constitutional member? You raised constitutional member at the beginning. What's his relationship been with on the budget so far? You said earlier you got what you wanted. What has been the nature of the relationship? Just to be absolutely clear for the record, although I think broadly speaking, believe that I think it's already a conviction that Parliament should fix the budget. But what has been the relationship with various ministers since 1995?
Easy answer, that.
I guess I carry the institution memory having been with the Commission since 1994. The relationship has always been a tensional one, if I may say so, because within the budget of that is defined, the Commission is one of the few bodies that doesn't have a vote as such for its allocation. So it sits somewhere within the programs of the National Treasury and the National Budget Vote. So in the past, we were required to go and bid or put in our budget for our work that we've been doing. And I think in that sense, we have been able to achieve and get the kind of budget that we wanted.
You've got the money that you want. Thank you very much.
So can I correct you? We got the money we asked for. Maybe I don't know what's better, but it's not like we want so much and we get it.
You know, ask for some money and you want it. When it comes to the budget, actually, increase the budget. Just wondering why is the budget increased so much? And I hope it's not your venture in Africa. Why has the budget increased so much? We should know a little later. But without getting into relationship on the body, we will go to Mark now, relation.
Thank you. I'd like to ask you crisply. I'm a representative. I'm going to ask you, what has the relationship been with ministers? Now, just from reading, I have seen that the Minister of Finance, once at your 10th anniversary conference, said what a wonderful role you, what a useful role you have played. It said that. But then on another occasion, the Minister said you should possibly be shut down because we didn't need you. So presumably, I think Commissioner Josie said that it is sometimes things. Would you not think that it is natural for tension to exist between independent institutions?
Honourable Member, sometimes it's not a bad thing to have that kind of at one moment, because it is the Minister, it is government, and if the Minister at one point thinks you're nice because you're making recommendations that suit government, and if at the other time the Minister thinks that you're making recommendations that he's not going to be so nice to you. So I think in my sense, and I think it actually enhances the role that the Commission does, impartial, objective recommendations in terms of the formula.
Thank you very much.
Is there a danger that you intrude on policy terrain? For example, you say in the document that the redemarcation of those cross-province municipalities, that would have been characterized by greater stability had you been involved. Now, you know, one isn't necessarily convinced by that statement, but is this really the legitimate terrain for you? I mean, your chairman just a minute ago refers to, is that what you were referring to when you talked about cross-border work that you did for KwaZulu-Natal? But my question is this, is there a danger of your intruding on policy terrain? That is, you deal after all with the constitution requires that the provinces and local governments have the basic services undefined in developmental needs. Now, it occurs to me that the socio-economic rights, which is something slightly different, are interesting here. The big difficulty with those is how can a court adjudicate and enforce if there's a policy terrain? And Commissioner Josie has spoken on this matter.
That's a question.
Is there a difficulty of intruding on policy terrain?
Well, crime is policy. Cost of norms, they're proposed. Was a policy. So I will ask them. Of course, their job is to make recommendations on policy. Please.
Okay, I'll comment, but also just ask Josie to fill in. I think yes, we are working sort of at a peak on these issues. We go to the provinces, for example, their legislatures, and they all are beginning now to say, you have been making recommendations, you don't follow their impact to see how they are impacting out there, and we feel that you must now begin to roll out in that direction and follow your recommendation. But now the issue with us in the commission, then we are saying, but now that becomes an oversight, because they will have spend money from their legislatures and so forth and so on. So when we begin to go and see what has happened to that money, are we not really doing the work of parliament? Yeah, right. So that is really actually a big problem for us, and perhaps a problem that would actually cause intention inside the commission, because there will be commissioners who will say, no, we are okay the way you are, because you go this way, you go into other people's terrain, then that is a problem. Let me say on the whole, we need to checkmate ourselves on many issues, which might also can extend and explain what you are saying. We are little known, we are doing a lot of effective work, but at the same time again, maybe little known.
Yeah. Let's go back to your response. I'm surprised that the nation of our body is part of no mechanism protocol that exists. No formal mechanisms. We have to go back to yours. No formal mechanism exists. You're considering no formal protocol regarding instruction in the executive, etc., or with parliament. This has been in existence now for nearly 13 years. Can you tell us exactly why, in fact, there's a general view that some of these chapter 9, 10, 11, 12 bodies are really not accountable because they don't have a system relating to accountability with parliament, which are particularly with parliament? And you say you have no system, no protocols. Isn't that astonishing after 13 years? Because one of the term references is parliament performing its function. Now, if in fact you have no protocols, well, just explain to us why in 13 years you haven't. Secondly, it's not fair, but then you are the chief executive. Secondly, who do you account to in parliament? Do you have a parliamentary office? No, sorry. You have a parliamentary office in Cape Town, which I'll come to in a moment. So we're not micromanaging you. What we are concerned about, some of the reference. What's the interaction? So could you answer that question then? And this drives the first point. Why are there no protocols or not protocols, agreements, rules about policies relating to relationship with parliament, provincial government, local government? And secondly, what role does the office play in Cape Town then? So could you answer that please?
Honourable Chairperson, may I answer on behalf of the permission of my chair? The relationship has been a difficult one, and one of the reasons we have our office in Cape Town, and it's because Parliament itself has requested that because of the absence of a formal protocol, one member of the two full-time members should be based in Cape Town. And that was the decision that the Commission took to facilitate that kind of arrangement. But that has not been optimal. The problem still persists that the only institution that can actually facilitate and promote the regulations and the protocols is the Ministry or the Department of Finance or the Treasury. So we had in fact engaged legal advisors to prepare protocols, and at the Budget Council, the Minister in fact supported that, but those protocols had not had a champion in Parliament, and we have not been able to take it. And I think it goes back to the question that Honourable Members must raise. If there is a serious intention to establish regulations and rules of how these bodies interact, then I think we would achieve a greater degree of success.
In fact, three or four years ago, said the financial for FRC is the constitution and recommendation of parliament and provincial legislatures. The commission has not taken the matter seriously enough, it says. The geographical distance between the main office and national fund, 1,500 kilometers apart, illustrates this misunderstanding. Commissioners have repeatedly failed to attend committee meetings instead of sending research staff. Mine too. And this is a bit old. Can you correct that in the report as to whether, in fact, commissioners have been going there? And that this report then, about 4 or 5 years ago, is totally out of date. And unfortunately, that was not here today. So.
Thank you, Chair. As I indicated earlier, that has been essentially the role of the deputy chairperson to make sure that happens. And since 2003, I've been based in Cape Town. And I've been attending the meetings, and subsequently we've had and established very positive relationships both with the select committee for finance and the portfolio committee, and we also run training programs for the committee members in terms of intergovernmental fiscal relations, and we attend and present all the recommendations to the committee.
Apart from finance, which other committee do you relate to?
Well, we relate to all committees that the joint budget committee, but we also relate to committees where our recommendations have pertinence. For example, if we make a recommendation on the education area, then we would call and get the chair of that committee to convene a meeting so that we can present those recommendations and brief that committee in that sense. But subsequently, we've had a meeting with the chair of chairs in Parliament, and he has facilitated joint meeting of all the committees so that we can facilitate that and present our recommendations.
Now, the last sentence there in your report, the only activity undertaken with regard to participation conference and workshops, the Human Commission. In 2001, you made possibly the most revolutionary proposal, the cost of norms proposal, this much. Because this follows the enormous differences between the grants per child in each province, which we're trying to create now. And the cost of norms is enormously important. Now, as you know, there is a chapter 9 body that has been really looking at economic and social rights very carefully. Very clever, brilliant reports that they're making. I would have thought that there should be a close interaction between some of their chapter 9 bodies, particularly the Human Rights Commission, other conferences, and this body. Can you clarify for us why? Because this is one of our terms of reference, the cooperation between these bodies. Why there has not been, particularly in relation to the cost of norms, which is a very important human rights element, why there was no interaction, direct negotiation, discussion, deliberation with the Human Rights Commission?
In fact, we've had very strong relationships with the Human Rights Commission on this issue. Because there's an absence, you will recall that other commissions of a similar nature on intergovernmental fiscal relations, like the Grant Commission in Australia or the Indian Commission in India, their terms of reference for recommendations are set by the executive and so on. But the FFC does not get its terms of reference set. So,
the report should have said this. The report does not refer to the close, or the cost of norms thing, very close to what the Human Rights Commission. So we have to take into account what you've reported to us. What occasional opinions about other countries, what has happened here is that you do not have links with other chapter 9 bodies. That's what the report said.
We don't have formal links with any of the bodies, but the basis for our link to the Human Rights Commission is that in terms of making our recommendations, there are two issues in the Constitution that we take as terms of reference. One is the Bill of Rights, that we have coined the phrase constitutionally mandated basic services, and the other one is that there are constraints that are listed in section 214A-J of the Constitution. So in terms of that, we have interactions with the Human Rights Commission.
Thank you. We should have revised this report to the committee. And I said you should be introspective about these matters. We will, of course, talk to the Human Rights Commission about the interaction with you too when they come here. But of course, the model is one of the very important elements, and it's mentioned in the clinical social rights reports on development education. Right, we'll go on from there to this question of any other question on
my concern is just that we're skipping questions here. And let's just go back to, because it now also arises from what you just said. Questions 3 and 6 for the purposes of people recording, but which ask you about outcomes and how do you measure your success. And those answers, I presume, would be by the number of proposals accepted. I see somewhere, in some work that you have done, and would this be correct, that only 30% of your suggestions have been rejected. Does that sound right? The 70% of acceptance? Do I understand correctly that you are the people who proposed the idea of the MTEF, the multi-year budget cycle, great achievement, I would think, the cognitive norms, which I do actually know about. Is that correct? Surely that is your measure as an advisory body, and are those facts correct?
Yes, I think as the Commissioner Malthus just tells me, was the first deputy chair, the whole current formula and revision was a proposal from the SSC. The first recommendation that the Commission made was to introduce a cyclical budget system. We called for a planning cycle of 5 years, but the government accepted a 3-year MTS cycle. And I think thereafter we made other recommendations which have been effective. And I think 70-30 is about right.
Thank you very much. Very effective. We move on. We have 21 other spheres to go through. Institutional governance, which is very much part of what comes around. Yes, Russ? Is that a question?
Now, I think this is working as a management. Thank you so much for the people who need to give us things. Because it's almost written as a proposed arrangement that you'll have. But I think it's going to be possible to do it as part of the network. I'm very trying to go as to figure out as possible and do with the principle of how if you like. Because some of them are whole long sections of what we see over legislation in an extreme degree and under-education. But the newspaper is from the top, which your paper is the object of the commission. I'm sure you don't have to be of this. But the first thing that I saw is that there must be an oversight mechanism, which you then extend upon it.
The chief executive is the chairman. Now, isn't that incompatible with governance? This may have happened in 1994, but the chief executive is the chairman. Is it compatible? I'm not talking about king, I'm talking about administrative proceedings, not the king report. Can I respond to you? And also in the context of the proposal to abolish, I must come back to that, the deputy chief executive to abolish it. So, could we have a response, please? How do you see the chief executive in this very important, because it's policy issues, remember that, it's policy making, recommendation of policy. The chief executive should be the chairman also.
Yeah, I don't know the spirit in which, you know, the founding father, so to speak, decided to combine the two positions. I really don't know. I would like to say then, it's very hard really to explain that, but it is possible that its success depends on the incumbent in the position. If the incumbent is cooperative and is willing to work with his colleagues and the commissioners and so forth, it can become a successful formula. But I think once you begin then to have conflict, it can become problematic.
We can't legislate for a venerable figure like Dr. Zeta. Nobody can legislate for that. So, what does the present venerable figure, Dr. Chaitanya, say for our own work about the combining the role of the chief executive? I mean, you may support it, please, you're entitled to do that. Or you may say it's inconsistent with governance. So we would like to know the present incumbent, not the Chaitanya's view, but merging the two posts.
In my situation, the experience I've had, I think this is perfect at the moment, because you are able to get issues, questions that you can decide on immediately without necessarily looking for where the chair of the commission is and convincing him that your answer ought to be this way, that way.
We've got the answer, it's for our consideration then. But you have another question then.
My question is that surely the fact that the CMSA lists the FFC as a constitutional institution, and this law, of course, governs how things work. It says that the CEO of a constitutional institution must be the accounting officer, and it says exactly what he has to do, how he must work, which is in contrast distinction to the long, long, long new draft sections you've given us here on detail of what the chair must do, detail of what the chief executive must do, but you've given them an alternative and simultaneous role. Surely the fact that this, which actually predates the last FFC Act Amendment, surely this is a framework which works quite well in general, which suggests that it might be prudent to separate the rules, the roles, and
he's given the answer. He believes it works. I said, but we come in a debate with him, really. It's for us to deliberate on that. Dr. Chaitanya has given the answer. It works. Right? They've withdrawn the proposal about the abolition of the post temporarily, withdrawn from abolition of the post deputy. We can't have a debate about that. So I think as a consideration, you've given your answer. You've taken into account what the PFMA says, so, and of course you'll take into account when the report comes out in June. But that's not anticipating anything. Next question, please.
Can we go back now to where I started? Because I think it's the
The first thing you asked for is for an oversight mechanism. And would you care to address us at greater length on that? And what you are suggesting is presumably a special committee of parliament, is it? What is it you're suggesting? That deals simply with you, that deals with all independent institutions? What have you in mind?
I think there we are really calling for a closer web and relationship with parliament. And the mechanism that we are suggesting may not be correct, may not be the right one, but I think we are just trying for a mechanism that says let's work closer, because much as we are independent, we know that we are dealing in a political context, we know that we are dealing with human beings, and we don't want at the end of the day to be seen as a nuisance in terms of what we do. We think that interaction always helps a lot. So I think that could just be collapsing that. But if we need to shorten it, we will do so with our next document after we've looked at the question.
Yes, please.
The next thing you want, you want something that all of the Chapter 9s have. And that is a clear and explicit reference in your act to the need for all organs of state to assist and protect the Commission in order to ensure its independence, impartiality, dignity, and effectiveness. You have many of the other things that the other commissions have, the fact that you are subject only to the Constitution and the law and so on and so forth, but this one you don't have and you want it. And that is, it's a kind of self-evident, isn't it? But would you like to expand on it, because somewhere in here, in this paper, your management or yourself or someone has asked for a quite extensive set of requirements to be written into the law, and I'm trying to find it, for provinces and other people regularly to respond to proposals in writing and so forth. Am I right? Is the reason why you asked for this for this duty to assist from other organs of state? Is the reason for this request the fact that you also wish a more formalized responding mechanism from the provinces and the municipalities?
I love this one. She gets the answer in the scriptures. can we get a direct answer?
Yeah.
But in the answer in this, tell us, what's the defect that your proposal wishes to cure? Right? I mean, everybody wants to know, is there a defect at present that your proposal wishes to cure then?
Right. Maybe I'll start with the defect. The defect is that when we go to the provinces, and I alluded to it earlier, when we go to the provinces to report on our recommendations, they then say, you are just recommending, you don't follow up on your recommendations. So we face that criticism all the time. Now, the thing then is that, you know, how do we do it? We don't want to go snooping, or be seen to be snooping, in what other legislatures are doing to get information on whether our recommendation was. Our recommendations get accepted, but I think our problem is, are they actually implemented, and how many are they implemented as they go down the chain? We know that some are implemented, but we don't have a holistic picture of knowing whether they are actually implemented. And these are some of the issues stakeholders are raising when we go out there. So we are looking at this as a way of finding out. But if there are other ways, I think we'll be open to take suggestions. But that's really the main motivation.
Have you had any problems so far? Have you mentioned them in your other reports, as opposed to Parliament? Problems with the province?
My suspicion is that we have not, because Chair, I'm a new CEO, and I come in questioning. So we are trying then to look at those things.
Yes.
You ask to be the supreme authority in the Republic on financial and fiscal matters, no less, in law. Now, this is surely overreaching. Why are you asking to be called the supreme authority? Surely, government and its finance minister are the supreme authority in the Republic on financial and fiscal matters.
Yeah, Chair, when I reflected that in 2 minutes later yesterday, I thought that should go out.
You might look at the first paragraph in your report about becoming a world-class advisory body too. You might look at that. Modesty, what a bad thing.
Please address us on the next one. You want the provisions of the Financial Fiscal Commission Act to prevail in the event of a conflict between the constitutional function accorded to the Commission by that Act and any other legislation. What is the problem? What is it? Is it these other statutes, the ones on provincial tax? What's the problem?
No, I think I would suppose that we keep it like the previous one.
Let me say anything about the chairman and chief executive and the chief being full time. How did this kind of crystallization take place? When did it take place? Who fixed the salaries? Who takes leave? Who took leave? How did this extraordinary apostolic succession, this family, full time members, how did it happen?
Memory?
Honorable Chair, members, I think that again this speaks to the whole problem of the delegation between the roles of executive and commissioners and so on. And I think we have to be addressed, and I think that this committee is in a position to address some of those issues. I mean, currently, I just give you a classic example. I have to sign the chair's leave when he takes leave, and he has to sign my leave. I've been working as a full-time commissioner since 1999, and we can't pay ourselves bonuses.